You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
IE7, you're having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Since the dawn of time, marketers have been looking for a way to communicate with consumers. Now, more than ever, the tools in the arsenal of the marketing company have become quite refined and exceptionally sharp. Never before have we seen the ability to send targeted communications to clients, customers, or potential customers like we do right now. Everyone is online. Everyone has an email account, and consumers are certainly more comfortable buying goods and paying for them online. If you're not convinced, free-to-air television in this country is losing market share at a rate of 7% a year. iTunes is now globally the largest distributor of music, mobile devices are now more prolific than ever before, and the youth of today now spend more time texting and instant messaging each other than at any other point in time. Add to this the rapid rollout and take-up of mobile broadband in this country, and you can now reach almost anyone, anywhere, in a matter of seconds, and cost-effectively. The sharpest tool in the marketing kit is email marketing, and I don't mean spam. The Australian government is serious about minimising spam, but email marketing, when done properly and legally, results in not only instant reactions, but instant polling of recipients, and in most cases, in real time. For example, every week, this show sends out an email informing our listeners what's on the show for this week. We have a category in our email called "The following links were of interest to us this week," primarily to inform listeners of newsworthy technological happenings, but also it's a straw poll, giving an insight into what our listeners are interested in so we can include the topic on the show by the number of clicks on any given topic. So now you've probably got a good idea about the power of email marketing. Melbourne radio personality, Mayor of Hootville and self-professed Luddite Brett De Hoot runs a leading PR company whose main role is to help Australian NGOs, that's non-government organisations, and NFPs, the not-for-profit sector, communicate. Brett will join us live in the studios in a few minutes' time to discuss the roles of email marketing, social networking and blogging in the modern-day world of internet and mobile communications.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner talks about the 3G iPhone, or lack of it. Microsoft says it's made a fair offer to Yahoo. Symantec's latest security report, web attacks getting much worse. Telstra expects to win the broadband debate. And PayPal, mandatory, says eBay Australia. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron Smith.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Yahoo says no to Microsoft's $44 billion takeover bid. US investigators find stolen military hardware for sale on eBay. Photo sharing site Flickr now supports video. Symantec releases its latest internet security threat report, and an IBM memory breakthrough paves the way for 500,000 song music players. Welcome to Tech Talk News. While internet search giant and instant messaging company Yahoo is not opposed to some sort of deal with Microsoft, Chairman Roy Bostock and Chief Executive Jerry Yang said no to an offer of $44.6 billion last week. Microsoft gave Yahoo's board 3 weeks to enter into a definitive acquisition agreement before threatening to take the offer directly to shareholders. In a reply signed by Yang and Bostock, the board formally rejected Microsoft's proposal, saying it undervalues the company and is still not in the best interests of Yahoo or its shareholders. Yahoo said it was open to offers from any potential buyer, including Microsoft, but that it would reject anything below what it considers full value. The response is disappointing for Microsoft, which is reportedly in discussions with Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, with a view to joining its contested bid for Yahoo. Yahoo is also understood to be looking at an agreement with Time Warner's AOL, in which Yahoo would gain control of AOL, receive an investment from Time Warner, and give up a 20% stake in the combined entity. Such an investment would let Yahoo buy back billions of dollars of its own stock. Investigators from the United States Defense Department have uncovered a treasure trove of stolen military hardware for sale on the popular internet auction house eBay. The stolen military equipment includes parts for F-14 fighter jets, which investigators say could be purchased by international brokers and destined for Iran. Other items include nuclear biological protective suits, as well as unused chemical biological canisters used in mask filters. The Government Accountability Office said last week that the Defense Department regards much of the stolen equipment to be on the US munitions list, meaning there are restrictions on their overseas sales. Sarah Finicum, Director of Supply at the Office of Deputy Chief of Staff for the Army, said that the Army recognizes that the US military has had property accountability and visibility challenges, and that to correct the problem, the Army has started a program to account for all of its inventories. The popular online photo sharing site Flickr will begin allowing users to upload videos. Videos will show up anywhere that photos do in search results, photo streams, and RSS feeds. Any Flickr user will be able to view videos, but only pro members will be able to upload videos. A 90-second time limit has been imposed by Flickr while the new technology is assessed and fine-tuned, and individual video files must be smaller than 150 megabytes. Supported video formats currently include AVI, WMV, Apple's MOV format, MPEG 1, 2 and 4, and the popular 3GP format used by some mobile telephones. Analysts say that Flickr's foray into video hosting represents the latest example of Yahoo, which owns the photo sharing site, trying to keep pace with Google's YouTube in a crucial battleground. A report released by internet security firm Symantec says that social networking sites like Facebook, MySpace and Bebo are fast becoming key targets for online fraud. Symantec's Internet Security Threat Report for the second half of 2007 shows there were nearly 88,000 phishing hosts for that period, an increase of 167% from the first half of 2007. Phishing hosts act as fake websites, collecting information including login and password details from unsuspecting users. The report says that attackers have adopted stealth tactics that prey on end users on individual computers via the World Wide Web, rather than attempting high-volume broadcast attacks to penetrate networks. Symantec suspects that this may be because enterprise network attacks are now more likely to be discovered and shut down, whereas specifically targeted malicious activity on end-user computers or websites is less likely to be detected. Symantec's 13th Internet Security Threat Report was based on data collected from more than 40,000 sensors deployed in more than 180 countries. And international computer giant IBM says it's invented a new type of computer memory which could boost storage capacity by 100 times. According to a study published in the 11th of April edition of Science magazine, the new storage medium could allow personal music players like Apple's iPod to store up to 500,000 songs. The so-called racetrack memory stores data in the boundaries, known as domain walls, between magnetic regions in nanowires. And unlike flash memory, it can be endlessly rewritten with no wear and tear. The technology could take up to 4 years to produce and a further 3 or 4 years to refine for commercial use. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Hutchison's three in the broadband war for mobiles have actually brought their prices down yet again.
It's very frustrating to me that this happens.
He chose to attack Apple's operating system for one simple reason.
It was the easiest one of the three.
But are people going to nick things with high voltages through it?
Yes. But yes, because people are stupid.
But what's my website going to look like now? There's got to be some form of backward compatibility, I would hope.
You can't say the word statistics when you need to, but you can prove along with them.
Since then, the phone has been washed.
And you'll also be listening to the unedited version on the stream, which could contain anything.
What about a mobile phone under your skin? Would you think that'd be good? It's a bit like, you know...
Where does the SIM card go?
That should be allegedly.
Allegedly.
Can't wait to see it. It's supposed to be a completely different direction altogether.
But anyway,
it's like the three mobile plans. It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
It is.
Find a happy medium for everybody.
Can you say that any faster?
No.
Andrew, is that you?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello again. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me this evening, two very willing and able gentlemen, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan. Good evening to you both.
I'm willing, he's able.
Yes, indeed. I've heard that. Yeah, well, what a week it's been. Anyway, who wants to go first tonight?
What a big week in technology. Yeah.
What a big week.
It hasn't stopped today, has it?
What a big week in the Tech Talk Radio universe with catastrophe.
Oh, yes.
Be up a catastrophe.
Let's start off with a negative note and we'll build up from there.
Yeah, we've still got our head above water, thank you very much, Dr. Ron. No thanks to PowerWeb.
No, what happened there? That was a disaster.
Well, you can read all about it on the Tech Talk Radio website. If you're interested, just follow the links through to off the front page. We've had some download issues.
And to all those who've been trying to download past episodes or anything like along those lines... please check again. It's all on its way back.
It's all heading back into the land of cyberspace. Now, the provider who we've been quite happy with and been very successfully serving our MP3 needs to every man, woman and person out there in the world who likes listening to us, including a few radio stations, they decided that they were going to remove our files because, quote unquote, we're putting a bit of an extra load on their servers. Now,
apparently people actually want to listen to the show and that's a bit much for them to be able to cope with.
Absolutely. Now, I thought, well, that's quite flattering on one hand, but then quite annoying on the other hand because there are people out there trying to download shows. So, anyway, we have since come up with an alternative arrangement at the moment and things are actually... as Graham alluded to, back on track, and if you're looking for some of the older shows, they're not quite good. So
if you click on something and you don't find it there, click back in a couple of days. It'll make its way back.
It'll be there surely. So anyway, no thanks to PowerWeb, and we'll talk more about that. We'll give them the right reply.
The bad guys. Should we mention the new guys?
Well, so far so good. They've only had a track record of about 3 days, so we'll just let it lie for the time being before we go there because it was very
they might throw their hands up in the air in disgust as well, and we might be looking for a third provider.
Actually, like, you know, we only serve out, you know, 100 gig a month thereabouts. And
what's the allowed usage on the plan that we had?
400.
So I've only used a quarter of what we're
allowed
to.
And they're still carrying on about that we're excessively loading their system. So anyway, one thing that gets under my skin... what's the word for getting under your skin?
One thing which you find subcutaneous...
That's it. One thing I find subcutaneous is hosting providers that say they will deliver one thing and then turn around... yeah. And then say, no, we won't do that because... yeah. Anyway,
it's
I find that...
it's a failing of oversubscription models in general.
Well, I think the competition in that, you know, spectrum of web hosting is everyone has to up everyone else, and when push comes to shove, they really can't do it.
We've seen this for years. We've had large ISPs here who used to say unlimited plans, unlimited downloads, and then in the fine print, fair use policy applies, which is a completely arbitrary way of them saying, well, if we think that you're overloading our systems or... you know, enough's enough, then we're just going to implement some arbitrary line in the sand.
And also internet providers where they have an insufficient amount of incoming bandwidth to supply all their customers based on the assumption that their customers aren't going to use the maximum bandwidth all the time.
Indeed.
And but they also...
When customers do start ramping up their usage, they can't cope and things start to slow down.
It's a bit like an airline, isn't it? You know, they sell 110% of their seats and...
that's exactly what it's like, yeah.
...end up turning away that last 10% of the passengers and...
If everybody does show up on time, then, the whole system falls apart.
That amazes me. Certainly in this country, we don't tend to do that here, do we?
Yes, we do.
We do?
We do.
It's very much, a European thing or a...
oh, no. No? Happens here quite...
does it really? Yeah. That's amazing. So you pay...
I would imagine the discount airlines would do it as part
absolutely.
Of
their, oversell. Yeah. Common practice.
That amazes me. So you could pay for an airline ticket 3 months in advance and then get to the airport and be told, no, sorry, Even though we've had your money for 3 months and we sold you a ticket, you can't get on the flight that you wanted.
Yeah, that guy over there got in just before you, and as a result, yeah, we're now full. And here's the ticket for the next flight.
That is ridiculous.
Or the flight after, or the next morning.
That would make me really mad if that happened. It's never happened to me, thank goodness.
Yeah, well, I think but the moral of the story is pay full fare, the discount fares. If you down the bottom of the pecking order, you get treated like... Yes.
Is it true?
Words we can't use on the radio.
But that's the nature of the business. If you look at it from the airline's point of view, then on average, if only a certain percentage are turning up, 97% of people turn up for the flight, then how are they going to fill those last few seats? They've got to do it. So, but
have you flown domestically recently? They're very full.
Last time I flew was, probably 18 months or so ago, I think.
They're very full these days. I did a Sydney trip there recently, and it was like, not a spare seat.
I went back to Sydney in a day to attend an event up there, and, it was, I must admit, I was treated very nicely by the discount airline in question.
So you should.
Didn't have to flap too hard. They recognised that I was a larger person, and they put me in a seat that was... appropriate to that, although I had to volunteer to open the door for a plane crash.
Oh, one of those seats. You get lots of leg room, though.
Yeah, that's right, So, they were looking after us on one point, to that degree.
What's the collective noun of radio presenters?
A babble.
A babble?
A babble, that's a good one. All right, what's the collective noun of doctors?
A dosage.
Is that right?
Yes.
I heard that on the radio too. Have a listen to this.
Dear. If multiple doctors, a dosage of doctors, will have a number of patients, I would imagine the phrase, the patients belonging to the doctors.
Where did you hear this?
I simply add an apostrophe on at the end of the word doctors. So when I read the doctor's patients, that is, doctors followed by an apostrophe, I know I'm talking about the collective patients of more than one doctor.
Enough of this blatant, shameless self-promotion.
Yes,
that,
it was.
I was on Radio National
talking about collective nouns and doctors.
And most importantly, apostrophes.
It was very good. It's on our website too, but go and have a listen to Radio National and you'll see, hear Dr. Ron and read the transcript.
If you like such things, nothing whatsoever to do with technology at all. It's just another passion which I have.
Yes.
And there's a man sitting out there through the other side of the glass who can't hear us whatsoever at the moment, Dr. Brett De Hoot.
Excellent.
Who is probably the man completely responsible for your ABC debut. So we'll talk to him very shortly. He's
got a large PR. Yes, he does. He's got a large part to do with it. So we'll be talking to Brett.
Back to technology. Telstra tells Opel less farmers to use Vodafone. This came in on the newswire today. I couldn't believe this. Phil Burgess at his absolute best again. Telstra has suggested a solution to farmers worried about what will happen now that Opel's planned WiMAX network has been scrapped. Guess what he said? Go to Vodafone. Which is, in a way, for Vodafone, quite flattering, but in a respect to Telstra customers, you'd be going, huh? What? What's going on here? Anyway,
what the shareholders would be thinking about that, recommending that you go to a competition.
I would think that the shareholders would not have a problem with sending less profitable customers to the competition.
Ooh, that's an interesting way of looking at it, Graham.
It was quite interesting, I thought, when it came in today. It was good. Just an update on Telstra, speaking of Phil, because you reminded me of that. You know how this time last week on the show, I had spoken to NextG about a defective part of their network, to draw their attention to it.
You didn't have coverage where the map said you should.
That's right, everywhere it should be. It wasn't there.
Yep.
And what are we up to today? We're about 2 weeks away from shutdown of the CDMA mobile phone network.
Yeah, if it's allowed to happen.
Yes. It's very quiet at the moment, that front. We'll have to do a bit of digging and see what happens. But anyway, a week down the track, 2 weeks to shutdown.
Yeah.
I still haven't heard a phone call. I still haven't had a phone call from the alleged network engineer that was going to ring me back within 3 days. It's now 10 days, and I still haven't heard anything out there. Hello, Telstra customer service?
Yep, they're working furiously with the whiteout on that map.
Oh, is that what they're doing? Do you know? Anyway, there's a bit of follow-up for you. Speaking of things, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au, that's where you can send any email to us, good, bad, or indifferent. Tell us what you think, what you like, and all that sort of stuff. We like getting emails. Here's one I received earlier. This is from Lachlan. G'day, Lachlan. Hi, guys. As someone who is enthusiastic about technology and works for a large ISP, I've been enjoying podcasts of your insightful analysis for around 18 months now. My topic of interest include IPTV, naked DSL, VOIP bargains, VOIP business call centres, and ABC Online. beacon to broadcasters worldwide, in other words, he's got here. So there you go. And he finishes up saying, keep it up. Thank you, Lachlan. That's good. You work for an ISP.
Lachlan,
you might want to tell us which one.
A large ISP.
How large?
Yeah, well.
How large?
Some are bigger than others.
Bosses could read your email, according to Julia Gillard, in the news that's just come out.
Yeah, yeah.
The federal government is basically saying to people that they can look at your email without any
but
form of permission.
We've known this for years.
Isn't that already provided for?
Now, I went to a legal thing, because I'm an employer, went to an illegal...
You went to an illegal what?
I went to a legal meeting about how to treat employees technically.
Yeah.
What you can and can't do. At that meeting, which was about 2 or 3 years ago, if you, as an employer who own a domain name and are running a business from a domain name, have every right to intercept and look at emails that go to your domain name...
Yeah, that's what I understood the case
providing
to be. If the company provided the email service, then it was then all the data that was involved in it
belonged
to the company.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know what all the brouhaha is about. This is not new.
Well, maybe they're looking at, trying to work out what people are accessing on their own personal email accounts from their work computers. If they're, looking up their Hotmail or their Gmail from their work computers, whether they're trying to get access to that sort of data.
Who knows?
I'm not sure.
Does it say why she thought it pertinent to alert everybody to this? It's something that's been in place in Australia for years.
The new laws would give companies extra power to monitor their computer networks to prevent cyber attacks.
There are new laws?
Apparently.
What?
They would be allowed to check their staff's emails and internet communications without their consent. Deputy Prime Minister Julia Gillard told Channel 9 the proposed changes would step up national security of Australia's computer network. So it's all...
Yeah.
But can...
She was all over the radio today spruiking it, which was...
Wow.
Yeah.
I just think they've lost the plot a little bit. I really do. It's... Anyway. Your thoughts, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Broadband, just because we can, an emerging India telecommunications company, two huge private equity funds, and a major local investment bank are all considering making bids through consortiums for, guess what? The Rudd's government's $9 billion plus national broadband network.
Okay.
Here we go again.
It's going to be called Opel. No, we've had one that was called Opel. This will have to be called something different.
I was listening to Stephen Mayne on the radio today whilst driving around, and for those of you unfamiliar with Stephen Mayne, he's a quite loudly spoken chap who has opinions on a lot of things.
Often
very
described as a shareholder activist. He attends general meetings of companies that he buys a few shares in and, makes a fuss.
He shared a very interesting pearl of wisdom.
Oh, that desperately needed to be done, yeah. Go on.
Did you know that China, the Chinese government, and another company who I believe was Singapore he named, own more businesses in Australia than the Australian government does? Does that surprise anybody?
No, it doesn't surprise me. No.
It's been quite a hot debate in circles today about the fact that Australia is selling technology overseas or selling itself overseas.
Oh, at a ferocious rate.
And as a result, there's no other country in the world like Australia that just sells itself down the international pipeline. And as a result, we don't have, I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about there's going to be a NASDAQ here in Australia of top 10 or top 20
technology companies.
IT companies, Australian ones. Apart from Telstra, I couldn't even think of one that's going to be put on there.
Mm.
We just don't have these sort of companies, and it's becoming a fairly sizable concern, I would have thought.
And he was bemoaning this, was he?
He was.
Mm.
Well, it's a valid concern. Australia's produced some people who have come up with some of the best technology that's in use on the internet and around the world.
And where are they? They're not here. They've gone over
to
Silicon Valley.
Overseas companies. That's right, yeah.
Lid's on the show tonight, too, by the way.
There you go.
Nice link, Graham.
A primary example, yes.
Yes, Lid will be talking to F-Secure, one of the antivirus companies, about the latest trends going on and silly things out there which people do to get themselves infected. So that'll be good. That's coming up very shortly. But in the meanwhile, Microsoft and Yahoo Play rewrites the script, apparently. You spoke about this briefly in the news, Dr. Ron. The latest developments in the Microsoft-Yahoo affair have advertising executives contemplating a drastically different landscape in the online world.
Mm.
Now, we've touched on this, haven't we, with 9MSN and Yahoo 7, which are the two sort of TV station rivals.
Yeah,
and things like that.
That's 9, just, 9 alone 7, if Microsoft gets its way.
Absolutely.
It'll be good. It'll be interesting.
Yes. All 709.
You'll have nine watermarks superimposed on 7 watermarks on your television, as if we don't have that already.
Mm.
Well, a couple of media analysts are really beating this up, saying that this is going to be a real huge, upheaval in the sort of like broadband space environment, not to mention business space, because as we just said, you know, it's going to change some brand names of some fairly major Australian companies or who they've sort of associated with if all this comes off.
Yahoo's reportedly close to a deal with AOL, which is a Time Warner.
Really?
In an effort to thwart the Microsoft bid, I think I had in the news.
There you go.
So they're not wanting to.
No, the current
concede to
Yahoo
Microsoft.
People don't want the Microsoft thing. No. But I think the Australian television station links in this is probably a bit of a side issue as far as, you know, when you're talking about Yahoo versus Microsoft. I don't think they're really going to worry about whether
they just Channel 9 or Channel 7.
That can be sorted out somehow. It doesn't really matter. We'll figure that out. It's only Australia.
Let's get over the complex issues first.
Speaking of only Australia, are we the only country that has an affiliate, like a search engine and a television network associated together in the domain name?
MSNBC.
Well, there you go. See, I should get out more often.
Yeah.
What was it? MSNBC?
Yeah, NBC and MSN. That's the same arrangement as 9MSN. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, that's
MSNBC.
Thank you. I've learned something tonight. That's good. Victoria Police hits Facebook wall.
Oh.
Rather unfortunate, really. The Victoria Police has been refused access to a self-proclaimed terrorist's Facebook details after the social networking website demanded more information about an international counter-terrorism investigation into its member. Counter-terrorism agents were asked to supply more details about the death threat made by Facebook against a Melbourne Jewish woman and her family by an alleged member of the Iran-backed terror group Hezbollah.
This is the interesting difficulty that you're faced with sometimes when you have investigations, the police investigations or law enforcement investigations that span one or more or two or more jurisdictions. And the police in this instance may have an expectation that an ISP or an organisation like Facebook is going to just release information, or they might even apply for a warrant to obtain information. But that's all completely meaningless.
But the information's not held in the same jurisdiction as the threat's been made.
That's right.
The offender might be in a different jurisdiction again.
Correct.
It's all very complicated.
And so what's the world coming to? And I mean that seriously. Well, is this going to be a major problem?
This is what the world's going to.
This is what the world is now. And it's the issue that we were talking about some months ago with Lid. We were talking about, and also you're talking to Eugene Kaspersky about having some sort of internet police.
Internet Interpol.
Yeah. Personally, I don't think it's going to happen because we can't. In a small country like ours, we've got, you know, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 different police forces, and you're wanting the whole world to get together and cooperate, and we can't just do it locally. It'll never happen.
It'll only happen, I think, if we have another mass problem in the world where it forces authorities and governments around the world to work together to eradicate a problem. That's probably the only time. It won't happen voluntarily, I wouldn't have thought. Call me pessimistic, but that's my opinion.
I'm fairly pessimistic about the whole issue. I can't see an easy solution. I can't see a solution in the...
The solutions are going to be piecemeal rather than an overarching Interpol-type solution. It's just going to be that, a police force here might have to always put their international requests through the AFP, and the AFP might have links with the FBI or other individual forces in other individual countries.
You might have to have a representative in each jurisdiction that everybody uses, but
it's going to get difficult.
What about country businesses, or should I say international businesses, more interacting and being proactive in their defences when it comes to this? Just cooperating because they can.
No, it won't happen. Won't happen. Because they've got too much to lose. If they're starting to release this sort of personal information, especially the people that are, or organisations that are overseas, even if they're law enforcement organisations, people are going to say, well, what you're doing what with my private information? I'm a Facebook user. What, you're going to give my name and date of birth and occupation to some police officer in the UK?
An example like this seems fairly clear-cut, where someone's made a death threat, there's, you know, and Australian police force is making a request for information. That might, on the face of it, seem like a no-brainer. Yeah, give the Australian police the information. But what does it come down to if... let's say the Chinese government wants information on some people organising protests around the Olympic flame.
And the Chinese are saying, well, they're quite clearly in violation of local laws.
Yeah.
But recognise those laws, or the things that they're purporting to be offences? Are they offences?
And does a company like Facebook recognise that, the Chinese government's point of view might be accurate? So, it's a difficult
one. It's a minefield, isn't it?
It's a lot more complex and a lot more morally challenging than it would initially appear.
feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Send us an email. Tell us your thoughts. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a listen to Adam Turner. He's viewing from the couch the iPhone. There's a lot of rumours going around this week about a new iPhone hitting Australian shores. We're going to tell you about that. And joining us after the break, too, is the Mayor of Hootville, Mr. Brett De Hoot.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPad.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped in the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on a...
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program. That you are. Welcome back, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan, and our guest this evening has joined us from Hootville Communications. Brett De Hoot is no stranger to Melbourne Radio, by the way, too. He's quite at home here. He's just sort of sat in front of the microphone. He said he's been there all of his life, so he is here live in the studio with us. And we're going to be talking about non-for-profits and NGOs, non-government organisations, and email marketing, and just how they're not using it right, and how they are using it right, and how you can use it right, too, if you're that way inclined. But in the meanwhile, we're just going to have a quick little sojourn into iPhone territory. Apple's iPhone, boys. Have you had any thoughts about getting one yet? Because there's lots of rumours out there at the moment.
There are. There's rumours about an Australian version that might have 3G.
And there's all,
and
yes,
that might not be locked to one carrier.
Yes. And rumours that if it is introduced in Australia and a large carrier like the Big T takes it up, they're not going to accept anything less than an HSDPA version. It will not be worth their while. Is it turning off GSM?
Yeah, that's right, because that's not the network that they're trying to promote. So, yep, interesting times. There's also been denials of all these rumours as well. But, presumably...
And they're even talking about the synced opening of a Sydney Apple store, because there's rumoured to be some down here in Melbourne.
Well, Apple like to do this, don't they? They like to they like to have something to announce at their events.
Mm.
So, yeah, it'll certainly be one to watch.
Anyway, according to... it came out, the rumour started on the Macintosh Community Forum, MacTalk. And everyone's gone a bit, you know, over the top with these rumours. But according to a long-time MacTalk user, Apple has been informing resellers of their iPhone strategy for Australia. Resellers have been informed of the following things. Last week of June release, that's, about 3 months away, more than one carrier, no contract to lock in, which means you can't buy it on a plan, you must buy it outright, and current resellers will be able to sell phones. And then on the other side of the coin, you've got all the Macintosh retailers saying, they're just going to stitch us and, you know, take us to the cleaners and do what they do.
Well, it'll be unlocked anyway. Once it's here, it's been here for 30 seconds. It's not going to be bound to a particular carrier. Anyone who
and all
thinks
those
it
people
is
who
fooling
brought
themselves.
Their 2.5G version in, David, if you're out there listening to us.
Hi, David.
You'd be going, I need a 3G one.
It'll be time to upgrade.
Still have been the first. Now, I'd be willing to bet that our very own Adam has got a view about this.
Oh, he certainly does, and here it is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Are you sick of hearing about the iPhone yet? The rumour mill went into overdrive last week with the talk of a 3G iPhone and its imminent release in Australia. If you write a blog, there's no easier way to bring in traffic these days than to speculate on the future of the iPhone. The version of the iPhone currently available in the US is only 2G, so it can't take advantage of the faster 3G mobile data networks in Australia, such as Telstra's NextG network. Everyone is waiting to see when Apple will release a 3G iPhone. Apple guru Walt Mossberg recently made a throwaway remark that the iPhone will be 3G in 60 days, but this is unlikely. Paperwork needs to be lodged with the FCC in the United States 60 days before a wireless device is released, and iPhone watchers have been staking out the FCC without any joy. Depending on who you believe, the 3G iPhone is coming to Australia in June, or July, or not until next year. Of course, Apple might consider dumping the 2G iPhone on Australia, rather than waiting for the 3G version, but I think it would have a riot on its hands if it did so. The desire for a 3G phone is one of the few things stopping more Australians importing iPhones and hacking them to work locally. Other reports from the website MacTalk claim Australian retailers have already been briefed regarding an iPhone launch in the last week of June. This would seem to tie in with the Sydney Apple Store opening, any Worldwide Developer Conference announcements, the upcoming iPhone 2.0 software update, and allow time for stock to filter into the country. Of course, it would clash with Apple's typical policy of not telling anyone anything. Now, Apple went as far as denying it had spoken to retailers, which is more than Apple's standard no comment. Whether this means they're telling the truth or lying is another story. Now, the latest rumours claim that the Australian iPhone won't be locked into one carrier as it is in the US, and buyers won't be locked into contracts. Earlier this year, legal experts said restricting the iPhone to a single carrier in Australia could be considered anti-competitive. It seems at least once a week someone finds a new angle on the iPhone story and the hype continues. A few weeks ago, analyst group Gartner changed its opinion of the iPhone. Gartner originally deemed Apple's groovy phone unfit for business, but the upcoming firmware 2.0 release means that the iPhone will be on par with the BlackBerry, Windows Mobile and Symbian Series 60 devices for basic corporate use. Interestingly, Gartner thinks the iPhone might now be able to replicate the iPod's halo effect, which in consumer land has seen people buying Macs after using an iPod. It will be interesting to see if, once big business gets a taste of the iPhone, if it opens the floodgates for Apple products into corporate land. Meanwhile, nobody knows exactly what's going on with the Australian iPhone. I reckon it's a fair bet a 3G iPhone will be in Australian stores by Christmas, but your guess is as good as mine.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, thank you very much to Adam for that insight into the Apple iPhone. Adam is the journalist who writes for The Age here in Melbourne, The Green Guide, and the Sydney Morning Herald. So he's the IT columnist for those specific magazines and a lot of other things.
He's got
an IT Wire and
blog.
Things like that. Yeah, he's got a blog.
Seeking Nerdvana.
He has. And that chuckle that you hear is that belongs to
what better way to introduce our guest?
Self-professed Luddite and PR guru, Mr. Brett DeHoot, who actually is probably half the reason why we're all sitting here in the studio tonight. He used to have a program on Melbourne Radio, and he used to ask me questions, and now we can ask him questions. So this is a bit of what comes around goes around, really, isn't it? Hello, Mr. DeHoot, how are you?
How soon the student become the master.
Oh, yes, God does.
Greetings all, good to be here.
Lovely to have you back on the radio.
Oh, it's an absolute joy to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit about Hootville, PR extraordinaire, and featuring all those.
Not extraordinaire, but I run. It's a PR company, like many PR companies. We get people on the television and in the newspaper and on the radio. We might help people build their websites or their publish their magazines or do some media training with them, so on and so forth. That sort of suite of stuff. What is different about us is we do it for non-profit organisations.
That's so, your point of difference.
That is.
Yeah.
We try and be communications and media for good, not evil. You know, so we have clients like Urala, Mental Illness Fellowship, Victoria and Australia. Hepatitis C Victoria, we work with Oxfam, we work with the Australian Conservation Foundation, folks like that who, just like every other organisation, need to get their piece of the media limelight and their piece of the media pie, need to communicate to their members, raise money, you know, plug events, all that sort of stuff, and that's who we work for.
And Melbourne and Sydney based?
Yep, we have clients around the country and from you know, a lot of disability organisations and mental health organisations and combined pension and superannuance association.
Oh, goodness me.
We even represent old people.
So how are they communicating these days? Are they doing it right? Largely, are they doing it wrong?
They're largely communicating in the same ways as they used to communicate.
Oh, the postage stamp thing.
Oh, goodness me.
Australia
facsimiles. Love the old-fashioned machines.
Have you heard of the telex, Dr.
I have. I have heard of the telex. I studied it at school,
there
I think.
You go. There yes. you go. Yes, they're telex-based communication.
Oh, dear.
Systems. No, not quite, but not far from it. You know, they're... Yeah, it's. I suppose it's like the rest of the world. The printing press has been around since Weber, you know, centuries ago, and this online stuff is relatively new. And it takes a long time for people to turn around their expectations. You know, I was in talking to a group of fundraisers, the Fundraising Institute of Australia, and there was, I don't know, 60 or 70 fundraisers. The people who send you those letters in your mailbox asking you for a donation at tax time, there'll be some in just about every mailbox for every listener out there, and just before Christmas time. And those people, between them, send literally millions of letters and communications.
That must cost a fortune, comparatively.
An absolute sinful, evil, wanton, wasteful fortune. And I did ask everyone in the room, 60, 70 people, who here has an email list to which they might send, you know, instead of a letter, an email. One hand meekly went up and said, yes, I've got a list of a few hundred, and I experimented recently, but it didn't have a great result, so we won't do it again.
I dabbled.
And, of course, the sponsors of those events are all Australia Post, printers, designers, people whose best interest is absolutely. And it's historical. You know, those charities, some of them have been around 90 years or 50 years, but they weren't collecting a lot of email addresses, you know, all the way through. So they've got a certain way of doing things. You know, there must be a magazine. Every member must have a magazine, and it must be printed on paper and sent in the mail. Mm. You know, we must communicate to members, so we will write them a letter. And all of those sort of older-fashioned ideas. I mean, they have a bit of modernity. They all have websites, but they're fairly basic, I'd say.
So is the reason for their sticking with the ways they know just because of that? They don't know any other way? They're not savvy to the online way of marketing these days?
It's probably dangerous to be quoting Donald Rumsfeld, but he was pilloried, right, when he talked about the things we know we know.
The things we know we don't know.
I love this. And the things that we don't know we don't know. And unfortunately, the communications game and the modern stuff that you guys are very familiar with falls into that category of people don't even know that they don't know it.
You
know?
Mm.
So they happily, they regretfully and resentfully and curmudgeonly spend $15,000 maybe to send out 1,500 people an 8-page magazine when they could do it for, I don't know, a fifth.
But they don't even know there's another way. They're not even aware that they could be doing it more efficiently.
And the expertise is not there. You know, quite frankly, and I've said this to them, to their faces, you know, en masse, the skills in the corporate sector aren't there in terms of website development and communications and marketing in general, but it's exacerbated further in the non-profit sector where the money isn't there for salaries. And the sort of people, generally speaking, who are into PR, marketing, communications, websites, they're not growing up fantasizing about working for Urella. They're growing up fantasizing about working for Apple. You know, so the best of the talent generally gravitates towards the corporate sector, generally speaking. And generally speaking, the expertise does not fall into the communications departments.
So what are they doing about it? Are they're getting in touch with organisations such as yours, obviously.
What are you doing about them doing something about it?
That's a good question, yes.
Well, I'm insulting their lack of knowledge and comparing them to Dunrumpson. Look, we're trying to get them for, you know, just websites that aren't just brochures on the web, you know, that actually do something, which might use a bit of video, that might have, heaven forbid, an electronic newsletter.
Oh, goodness me.
That is a real step ahead for a lot of people who at the moment don't even have that. So they're sending people who they don't know, who gave an address years ago, a magazine that they slave over and angst over for months, spend a fortune to print and post, that they use volunteer time to stuff into envelopes, and they don't even know if it's been opened. If it's landed, which pages were read? You know, it doesn't give people
who's
an automatic...
reading it, when they're reading it, what they're doing with the information inside.
A magazine's something you don't put return to sender on, is it? You just go, oh, they're not here, just chuck it in the bin.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So people are satisfied with that because I don't think they know that there is a better way.
Yeah.
And if they do know there's a better way, it means, oh, gosh, doing things differently. And that sector is no different to most other sectors. Change is not exactly welcome with open arms.
These guys, too, are probably soliciting for funds so that they can do, you know, a better job in the world out there as well. A lot of people are now judging the credibility and the you know, just how well the organisation stands in the real world by the quality of their website. Absolutely. A good website means a reputable company, a company which can be trusted. How are you seeing this in this sector? Is this very much...
If you're trying to recruit money from people, or so to speak, or solicit money from people, that website and that look is very important. But staff is another thing. Just like every other sector, there is an absolute desperate fight to grab people to work for you these days. And what is the first thing a prospective employee will do, particularly in a market where there are jobs around, go look at the website to get a feel for the organisation. If that website looks slow and dated and old and dusty, they're less likely to apply, especially if they're go-getters themselves.
Mm. So where are we going to go? What should an organisation do?
Some organisations have got it right. You know, one organisation I can mention that's not a client of mine, of whom I'm very jealous, is Beyond Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous
Mr.
of
Jeff
them
Kennett,
for many reasons.
Ex-Victorian Premier?
Well-funded, well-regarded, prominent. You know.
But he has a reputation.
He does. But they also have the advantage that they've only existed in this era. You know, they don't have any history. They don't have any baggage. They didn't start a magazine because guess what? They were around when they were invented, created... The internet's been around
so
and a factor.
Beyond Blue is a referral service to
Beyond
an
Blue
existing...
is a referral service. They only exist on
because
the
others
web
do.
In reality.
Yeah.
Other people deliver the services. They have the advantage of being new and modern, so all of their resources are online, and no one expects necessarily to be able to call them. No one expects to be visiting a local branch. You know, that's a huge advantage. People like GetUp, which is a campaigning advocacy website-based organisation. Fantastic operation. They have a massive email list. And they contact that email list and ask them to take direct action online that minute, whether it be signing a petition, sending a letter to stop Japanese whaling, or to tell the Liberal Party to say sorry to Indigenous people, whatever it is. It's instantly activated. You're instantly measured. 12,000 people have now signed this signature. 12,001 people have now signed this signature. We want to get to 15,000 by midnight tonight. And there's a clock ticking down. These are people who get the web. And then when you sign that petition, you're joined, you give your postcode and you're joined to a map of Australia. And there's little dots in every postcode. And you can go and see how many people in Box Hill have signed that petition. And then say, this is hopeless. We need more people in Box Hill, and theoretically send the email forward and try and generate it. These are people who started off in this era with a very much a web-savvy perspective, and that's reflected in the work they do.
But it's exciting because it's all happening in real time, and it's steering your business, isn't it? It's giving you a minute-by-minute...
It's something business has never had.
Direction,
real-time
yeah.
interaction with its customers or its contributors.
Compare that to another organisation which sends a letter with a little tear-off slip down the bottom with the scissor icon. And you're expected to open the envelope, read it, be moved by the story, cut off the bottom
of it. Find a pair of scissors.
Find a pair of scissors, fill in the form, and send it in an envelope via Australia Post with a $10 check.
They're putting the postage prices up shortly too, so that'll encourage people to get online and do an email one, surely.
No instant response, no video. You know, one of my organisations, Seeing Eye Dogs Australia, they train and breed dogs for mm-hmm. blind people. We ask people to sponsor those pups. One thing I would like to see on our website, you know, just the way you sponsor children in poor countries, you can sponsor
a guide dog.
Absolutely, $30 a month. And I want to see video of individual puppies doing cute puppy stuff.
You need dog care.
And saying, absolutely, sponsor this dog right now. Mm-hmm. Or sponsor this one. What do you want? The brown one, the blonde one, or the black one? They're all very cute. They're all doing different things. They've all got cute names. One, for whatever reason, might appeal to you. You've got 60 seconds of video. Click and sponsor. I imagine that will have a more... That's the emotions that we can draw upon using the web and 2.0 and so on and so forth, which you can't do in black and white or in colour, in two-dimensional format on a piece of paper.
Mm. All right, we might take a quick break. We're talking to Brett DeHoot from Hootville, a PR company, and does all those NGOs and NFP types of things. We're talking about the new technology, email marketing, websites and the likes. When we come back, we'll talk practicalities, I think. We can talk about what people should be doing and how they should be doing it and when they should be doing it and all that and more. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It's not raining in Tokyo, and apparently the stream's breaking up in Illinois. Is it still right, or is it
No, apparently it's working again. Cheerios, Lily, listening in Illinois.
Oh, Lily, in Illinois? In our best Australian accent. Can you say Australia for us, Dr. Ron, please?
Australia.
That's it, beautiful.
I'm no Dave Hughes, you know, but I'll give it a best shot.
You're the ABC's grammatist now, aren't you?
Yes.
Anyway, and Brett DeHoos just saying this is the most over-engineered tech radio show he's ever been on. Well, that's a flat,
we've taken that as a compliment.
We've got terrestrial, we've got streaming, you've got forums, you've got podding.
SMS.
SMS as well.
Yeah, you can send us an SMS. Really? I'm giving the number out, 0430-582-077. You can impress Brett and send
him a text. We even have a 1300 number.
We do.
Why do you need a 1300 number, you people?
So people can call us for the cost of a local call from anywhere in Australia.
1300-664-882. You can get your voice on the radio if you ring that number.
Who bears the cost if someone calls from Cairns?
We don't know, but we don't care. The important thing, Brett, is that they can contact us.
Oh, I see.
Money is no object.
Clearly.
Oh, obviously. Come on, sponsors, yes.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan, and sitting across with us this evening, our guest, Mr. Brett DeHoot, the Mayor of Hootville. We're talking about email marketing. Well, we're about to talk about email marketing and the pros and cons of said technology and how to roll it out and implement it potentially in your organisation. You don't have to be a non-for-profit or anything. This applies to everyone across the board. So, Brett, where do you start? What do you do? How does it work?
And how do you walk the fine line between constructive marketing and really pissing people off with spam?
That's so easy to do.
I think spam. Good question. Spam has given email marketing a bad name, you know, and rightfully so, of course. I mean, there's only so much Cialis and Viagra one can take. I can tell you from experience. But there's a reason, obviously, why they do it, is because it's very cost-effective and it does get to the right people at the right time in ways that you can't get. You know, there's that possibility to incorporate in an email message the video, the audio, the graphic, and the words all at the one time. Also, I mean, you know, I've got a little list here that I use to try and encourage people to do a bit of email marketing. You know, a cost for a start. I mean, simple, plain old fashioned cost. And with my clients, money is always a factor. You know, money stops them doing more marketing. You know, so when I
it's everyone's factor these days. Money is everything. Whether you're making a television program or whether you're making a blue widgets, dollar
with chicken mail, you can send out an email for 3 cents each.
Mm-hmm.
3 cents.
What's chicken mail? Is that a service or
it's a service we use
it here on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, people who are subscribed to the Monday morning email they get from you guys,
yep,
understand basically the other end of the process of chicken mail, where an email is designed, drawn, written up, and sent, and the lists are stored and managed and updated in chicken mail. It connects to the subscriber page on the Tech Talk Radio website, where people can subscribe and explain a few details about themselves and say, yes, I want to log in. I want to get this e-newsletter once a week, once a month, once and whenever. And alternatively, I want to unsubscribe. It's all handled by the software Chicken Mail.
So they do all the hard work for you.
Correct.
All the distribution work.
And then when you distribute, when you send it out to your lists of 5 or 5,000, 5 million people, they will tell you, and this is a bit frightening, how many people have opened it, when they opened it, which people opened it, and then if you have links within your message, which links they clicked. I send once a fortnight an e-newsletter for people in the PR game, basically, particularly if they're in the non-profit sector, to about 1,600 people, which is a big number for that little niche. I know exactly who read it, when, and what links within the message they clicked, which tells me what they're interested in. Mm. I can also say, oh, Dr. Ron's looking for work. He clicked on all the jobs that I've had.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's not interested in the first 10 headlines. He's interested in the employment section.
Absolutely. Yeah. It also enables the people who receive that message to forward to a friend. And that never happens with a magazine.
No,
very rarely
exactly
do people
right.
say, oh, I've got this magazine from my health club or from the people who sell me computers or from a radio show. Here, have it. Subscribe yourself. It doesn't happen. It happens online. And here's a little tip. When you get an email from of an organisation, like Tech Talk Radio, from Hootville or whoever, and you forward it to a friend, and you write in a little message, something like, these guys are the most over-engineered radio show in community radio, but listen to them anyway, and send, the people behind the email can read everything you say.
No way!
And it does open you up to being hurt very much. Like, these guys are the biggest bunch of tossers, but I'm forwarding this email to you anyway. Click. And people don't realise that.
Ah.
You know,
But the thing is, all these new email devices actually do that these days, don't they? It's not as if it's like you sit down at your Outlook anymore, though I guess a lot of your clients do.
They are still sending mass emails.
They do the CC or the BCC to everybody, and you know who knows, they go off into people's spam boxes and things like that as well.
So you can measure it. You know, it doesn't cost you as much. It doesn't use carbon. It doesn't use plastic. It doesn't use ink. You know, environmentally, everyone talks about it. This is a simple way to do it. And as I said, you know, people can forward to a friend. Also, email marketing gives you the ability to send a little bit of contact to people who you would never feel appropriate to call. You know that whether your business is a giftware store or you're a home loan mortgage broker, those people whose cards you get at meetings, the people you meet at the function, the people you bump into on the street, who you think, I'd like to stay in touch with Dr. Ron. He might be a customer of mine in 12 months. Mm. You're not going to call him once a month for 12 months. That would be, well, stalking, and we have anti-stalking legislation. However, you can send him an email once a month, once a quarter, once every couple of months, that would just keep you at the front of their mind.
Yep.
And I know that. Every time I send out an email to my distribution list, I get a call from someone I haven't heard of in years. I have heard from, but I haven't in years. And suddenly, that's the catalyst for them to say, Brett, we want you to come to a meeting, or Brett, we want you to speak somewhere, or, you know, investigate some possibilities.
So are you a bit of a stats junkie? You sit on the stats when you send out an email and go refresh, 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 and see who opens your email
first? Something like chicken mail turns you into a stats junkie. And I've seen it happen to people who swore it wouldn't happen. We get all our clients to use this facility if we can, to connect it to their website, to mass email. Because the website, you know, it just sits there laying back thinking of England. But the emails go out actively and reach out. So, and when you send it, it's graphically represented in front of you in a nice, attractive-looking pie graph.
Mm.
And you want to see that green section get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's real time. You just press refresh. Ooh, 5 people have opened. Oh, 8 people. Oh, 13 people have opened my email. I'm a star.
And for anyone in marketing or fundraising or any of those sorts of areas, that's exactly what they want. That's
gold, isn't it?
It's gold to them, yeah.
It really is.
Gold, absolutely. I use that with journalists, though, and I hope none are listening. If we send out...
We have no journalists listening.
Adam,
can
close
you
your ears.
That?
Adam, close your ears.
Yeah. Adam was our winner this morning. He was the first person to open the Tech Talk Radio email.
Oh, so you know...
Within a minute... Well, he just sent me an email saying, I won.
Well, Adam, I don't want you to know this, but if we were to send out a press release using the same technique, mass email, I can sit on the computer and find out which journalist opened it when. And then, if I'm really smart, call them up. Oh, Adam Turner's opened up my email. Uh-huh.
Give him 5 minutes to have a read. And
Adam Brett to Hoot here from Hootville.
Look, just wondering if you've
had a chance to look at that email. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. All right, have I got a story for you?
I love it. That's great.
It works. Because you are striking while the iron's hot.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And also, if Adam's sick of hearing from me, he can unsubscribe. He doesn't have to call.
He can ring him up and say, why, Adam, why?
That's right. What have I done?
We're sorry to see you go.
That's right.
Was it something we said?
Look, it's one of those lovely passive things as well, because when someone subscribes, it can be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anywhere in the world, and you get a little email in your inbox saying, oh, Andrew McCollum's just subscribed to my newsletter, and you can see it slowly building, and that becomes one of the most valuable assets any of my clients has.
Yes, hello, Lillian. She just subscribed, is it? You're the person you're talking to on Instant Messenger?
In Illinois.
In Illinois?
Possibly. She said she did subscribe earlier.
Yay! Yep.
Daddy's Girl 1140 at a ISP near you. There you go. She's just subscribed. Go to the website.
Possible.
Go to Brett's website. Get on the Hootville one. That's a good read, too. I like Squiggle
all around us.
The Adventures of Squiggle is fantastic.
It is literally happening as we speak. That's exactly right. Now, Lillian likes it. She can send it forward to 3 or 4 friends. If we want to try and impress Lillian, or Lillian wants to give us feedback, in the e-newsletter you send, you have a button. Press right now for feedback and send it to me, because Lillian will never write you a letter. But she is quite likely, if she's that way inclined, she's got something on her chest she wants to complain about, she can hit the feedback button and write. Or, alternatively, Lillian, it could be a compliment.
The other thing, too, you've got from an organisational point of view, this is your very first and potentially your only opportunity to do a survey of your audience. You put a form on your webpage and you can ask them questions. And those questions can absolutely alter the direction of your organisation.
What questions do you have on the Tech Talk Radio e-newsletter subscriber?
Oh, well, just a bit of an example here. Do you listen on the radio? To which Lee answered no. Do you listen via download or podcast? Yes. How did you find out about it? A friend. What interests you? And there's a list of interests there and all that sort of stuff, and it goes on. But it certainly gives us, Tech Talk Radio producers, an insight into who's listening to our show. And more importantly, we have a little list on our thing, which is items of interest this week that have interested us on the newsletter when it goes out. And people click those, and we go, oh, look, 43 people have clicked this, and 2 people have clicked that, and then we know what to talk about on the radio.
That's exactly it. It gives us some direction as to what people are interested in, what people want to hear us ranting about.
Absolutely. You know, one of the most successful links I had lately was a list of top 10 PR disasters from 2007.
Oh, really?
And my God, that link went through the roof.
Mm.
Basically, 50...
And free things I find work really well. Free. So you put the word free in something and everyone clicks it.
There are certain keywords, aren't there?
There are.
Free love sex, I think that's it. Nazis and kittens. Not necessarily in that
free...
No.
All mutually exclusive.
That's okay. All... distinctly mutually exclusive. But yeah, you can learn, heaven forbid, you can actually learn about your audience. And it's, that culture is different.
Isn't that what you want to do these days? Learn about who you're talking to?
But the old culture, and this is writ large in lots of different companies and organisations, not just NFPs, we know what's good for you, we know what's interesting, we will deliver it and you will consume it. But smart communications people simply look at what links were clicked and act on it. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Not just say, oh, they love humorous PR stories. Yeah, I do. I put.
Or we are going to make them love this because it's what we want them to.
Mm. Give them what they want. They might, heaven forbid, come back. They might stay around longer. They might refer to a friend.
Mm. Tell me about other options that you can get. I know there's things like campaign managers and things that plug into these email packages these days. It means it automates things for the end user, like an anniversary, a subscription or something like that. Have you played with that much?
A little bit. I've got a facility where, you know, basically people who don't open it the first time have the ability to make amends and open it 3 days later when I resend it to them. I think that's very exciting for them.
Yeah.
But guess what? It works.
Does it?
Where do you get the chance to do that with mail? You know, let's say I send out 1,000 envelopes and 700 do get opened. That will never happen, but I'm being very generous. Mm. You don't know those 300 who didn't open it, and you don't have the chance to resend it.
The RACV doesn't know that I throw their Royal Auto in the bin.
You know what, though? The RACV does bloody know that you don't. Because, yes, they're not such idiots that they think we all open that plastic and read that appalling magazine. But they feel okay in sending out a plastic-wrapped piece of carbon to millions of people once a month. That's not okay, as far as I'm concerned. And I think it's got to the point where it actually damages RACV's brand. If they did that electronically, you know, they don't want the statistics because they would have to share those stats with their advertisers.
Well, that's
and
very
the advertisers
point, actually.
Who are told that there are X hundreds of thousands of readers would suddenly realise, what do you mean?
Hang on,
12.5 people opened up page 67.
Yep.
And so, heaven forbid, advertisers should be wanting this too. Because it actually empowers
It's a cold,
them.
Hard reality, isn't it? When you actually start sending out emails, you know how many people are on your list and the realization of how many people actually open the email and read it. And then, so what you can learn from that, though, is the content in your email, you want people to open it. So, therefore, provide them what they want. And if you give them good quality information, and not a lot of it, just give them headlines. Don't bore them to tears with 4,000 pages of your email. Put them to your web link so that those who aren't interested in it won't scroll down. Because how often do you scroll all the way to the bottom of an e-newsletter when it comes in? Apart from the fact that if it's really, really interesting and it's relevant, you know, there's only one or two that I subscribe to, which I have a good read to, and I pick the headlines out like I do in the newspaper.
That's what you do, don't you? You pick out the headlines, you scroll down, you see something you're interested in, you read a little bit about underneath it, you go, yeah, that's what I want to know about, and click.
So write your newsletters that way, I would say to anyone, if that's the way, because that's how we read newspapers.
Yeah.
Are you going to sit down there and read everything word for word? I don't think so. Yes, anyway. So what's going to happen now? Are we really going to become an email society? I can't see the paper side of things disappearing in a short term because a lot of people like the touchy-feely coffee table sort of glossy thing, which is very expensive, I know, but it's still...
There are lots of vested interests. You know, there's a lot of graphic designers out there, printers, postal people. And when you're sending out 5 million letters a year, you know, that's a big investment and there are plenty of people helping you do that. And there are lots of... There's the infrastructure there. You know, there are... At all those events for fundraisers, I'm surrounded by, you know, the designer person, the print sponsor, the mass postal, the mail house sponsor, that's already existing. And that's not being counted at the moment by people like the chicken mail people who are going out and saying, hey, there is a better way over here that's cheaper, faster, effective, measurable, blah, blah, blah.
But
and people just change slowly.
There's still ways you can incorporate that sort of paper, glossy marketing into your electronic marketing by having in your newsletter, if you want us to send out the glossy calendar, click here.
Absolutely.
That sort of stuff. And that way you're only printing to the people that want it.
and, much better use of resources.
And people expect that choice now, and they deserve it. And, I mean, there are stats there about fundraising online versus fundraising not online. Online works.
Mm.
Because we all know that credit cards inspire people to spend more money than
impulse
they would
shopping.
Spend in cash. That's right. Online fundraising gives people the ability to donate on impulse. Online fundraising gives the ability to show 60 seconds of either a very cute puppy or a dying child in a third world country that you cannot do on paper. So if it's truly, and there is a big industry in appeal letter writing and fundraising, more consultants than you can point the proverbial at, and they all talk about getting to people's emotions to extract dollars for good causes.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to do that? Clearly, you know, video, audio, you know, colour and movement, not just a two-dimensional still image on a piece of paper. So serious fundraisers have found already, and there are stats to prove it, online fundraising works very nicely indeed.
The other option too is personalisation of an email. Dear Brett.
Absolutely. It could be gender-based. It could be age-based.
Yes.
If a big membership-based organisation, say you're the AMA, you've got 26,000 GPs around the country, well, this 55-year-old male, Shiraz-drinking, four-wheel-drive, inner-urban GP is very different to an Indian doctor who's come and he's just established in Wagga Wagga and he's working at a bulk billing clinic, or the 27-year-old woman, or there's very different people. They shouldn't be getting the same communications. They should be getting some stuff in common, but there should be customization for each of those people. And guess what? They'll read it.
Brett, take a step back from email.
No, I refuse.
No, I'm going to make it. What are your views on the future of messaging, electronic messaging? I'm at odds here with...
you're a Twitter person?
With some of my colleagues here in relation to how email is headed. And I think personally that email's headed for extinction in the not too distant future. And that it's going to be replaced by more efficient, more collaborative means of messaging. Just interested in your thoughts.
I know who you should talk to. He happens to be a client of mine.
Right.
But I'm not... I think, you know, that concept of long-tail marketing, long-tail... Just like, guess what, you can still buy CDs. Why should you be able to buy CDs? But you can. You know, you can still...
Because we want them. We want to put them on our record collection shelf to be drawn out and split up when we get
and
divorced.
And same with magazines. The magazine might be just becoming vaguely in... Well, it's not even endangered yet. You know, I think there's a category of animal before endangered, then endangered, very endangered.
Coffee table books are on the rise, I would have thought.
Believed extinct,
And email will be around for a lot longer. Because we haven't even come... NFP, speaking on their behalf, I think I've got some idea of what they do. They haven't even started, basically. They've just started using email. So for them, at least, it will be a long time before email is dead and buried.
Interesting.
But there are other ways of forming communities. You talked about, the forum, that sort of thing. And, Facebook's... And MySpace and so on are offering some smarter, faster NFPs, the possibility of forming communities globally. I've got a few here. Support Breast Cancer Research in the States, 1.5 million members. That's a lot of people. However, it's not a great way to raise money. $31,000 raised. So it's great for people to instantly say, yeah, I'm down with breast cancer, click here, But to actually get them to do stuff is a different issue. Mm. I haven't answered your question at all.
No. It's... There's so many ways of looking at the issue, and it's a large issue. I don't like the way that email at the moment. To me, is it's starting to reach the end of its natural life. It's starting to rapidly approaching its best before date or best
others,
after date, as
would
it may be.
Not agree with that.
I know others don't agree with it, and that's why I'm raising it. I don't think it's useful anymore, based on the fact that we're approaching like 99% of all traffic on the email system. Is unsolicited, it's unwanted, it's spam.
Yes.
The system itself doesn't inherently support the transmission of files and binary files and attachments. It's designed for text. There's no authentication when we send messages, which is why we've got so much trouble with people sending unsolicited mail.
I don't know if I don't see personally, for my purposes, I think email's got plenty of years to run, but websites to me excite me less and less. And email actually excites me more and more, and those other forms of communication.
It's interesting.
Because I don't want of the opportunity to personalise.
Personalise. It's proactive. It's not waiting there, thinking back, laying back, thinking of England. It's less unwieldy, too. I think you can quickly or very simply establish an email message and send it out to people who give a damn, who have opted in, and then measure it and so on and so forth, where websites, I find, are less effective. But...
But websites serve another purpose. As I mentioned earlier, I believe a website builds the brand, builds credibility, builds trust.
to an organisation. It's like going to the old Yellow Pages and looking someone up, and if there was a really big colour photo there in the phone book, your people go, oh, they're a big company, they're trustworthy. Mm. If it was a one-line entry, there you go, well, I don't know about that.
I suppose, though, for more and more businesses and your show and other businesses, they want to form more than just, it's not the initial response. After you've got them, then you've got to build some sort of relationship and community, and especially my clients. They're trying to get perhaps a more active response from this pretty much the same body of people. You know, the same 3,000 clients and 4,000 carers, about maybe 7,000, 8,000 people. We want them more active, more often, better informed, more often, ready to send a letter off to their MP to demand some sort of change, ready to march on the streets, ready to sign a petition. And websites don't do that the way other forms of communication can. But I'm not a great fan of, you know, there was one charity recently, you know, offering to download a game to your phone, I presume a 3G phone, I barely know what that means, where the game was something about you're a refugee and you have to get your sustenance via lentils and you have to get your powdered milk and you have to get out of the war zone. Sim City meets UN, you know, the United Nations meets Somalia meets Sudan. Downloadable to your phone. Now, I can only...
This is some sort of promotional thing to raise awareness for the...
Absolutely. Yeah. I can only imagine how much work went into that. But, talk about the over-engineering to death. You know, whether people actually take that up is another issue.
Brett, it's been absolutely fantastic having your insights into the wonderful lands of email marketing. Hootfield.com is your website, and why don't you go and sign up to Brett's newsletter? It's really good. Squiggle the dog is a really good character.
Oh, I love Squiggle.
Look, just I should explain.
You brought Squiggle here with you tonight.
That's right, I have indeed. He actually cancelled the keynote he was going to give to come in.
He doesn't have a microphone, here, though.
No, he's not. He's a little high off the thing. Squiggle's a 78-year-old dachshund who's a bit of a mascot for the business, and he actually is a guest columnist each fortnight in the Hootfield Lowdown. And quite a remarkable image of him each week. Squiggle's been
through.
He does get around.
He was
the second guy who voted in the first free and fair South African election, first dashing in space.
I've seen him in front of the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, in front of the... Oh, he loves architecture.
He does.
Yeah, he does. And people actually tune in. Wherever I go, people do ask, where's Squiggle? And so on and so forth. So heaven forbid you can actually put a bit of personality into that sort of stuff.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? We'll be back with more in a moment.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, thank you to our guest, Brester Hoot, who is, all about those sort of things. Email was very interesting, wasn't it, Dr. Ron?
It was extremely interesting.
We learned
something. It's somebody who uses that technology at the coalface every day, which I don't do. Email marketing.
It certainly is a medium which I think will be well and truly explored over the next few years.
I think so. It's got heaps of potential, and certainly with the technology that's behind it now, it's come so far from just having contacting categories inside Outlook and highlighting 100 contact cards and clicking send to contact. Is so much more than that now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And even to the point now where you can use PayPal and those sort of organisations to secure a little, you know, donation. You can grab a button off the PayPal site if you've got a PayPal account and stick this little button on your email newsletter when you send it out and say, please give us $10 or $20. Click the button of your choice type sort of thing as you go down the list. So I think, you know, things like that would be really good.
We can link to external resources like that, like PayPal.
Yeah.
You can link it into your shopping cart applications.
And in the true sense of Anna Corrin, we're going to talk about PayPal now. How about that?
Oh, are we? Oh, good. That was fortuitous.
It was. PayPal are going to be using Australians as guinea pigs.
Oh, good.
In the new form of PayPal shopping and eBay shopping online. In news that's sort of come out, which has got a few people's noses out of joint, but I actually think this is going to be quite good. Online auction website eBay is using Australia to do this new trial, and the new policy, which prohibits all other methods of payment except the transaction gateway in PayPal. So what you can do in PayPal is use your credit card and use the PayPal account itself, which is your email address to pay your bills and stuff like that. But it means that you can't do bank transfers or anything like that anymore. So they're going to remove that?
This means that if you're, I'm just trying to get this clear in my head, if you're a PayPal partner, is it what that's, they're saying, you can only use PayPal as a method of transactions.
If you're a merchant here in Australia, you can, on eBay, which is the world's largest online shopping centre, you can now only use PayPal to pay for your goods that you purchase.
So you can't solicit for Western Union wire transfers.
Well, don't mention that word.
You can't ask PayPal for direct credits into bank accounts.
No, you can't.
Which is something that's
I think it's a terrific idea, actually, because I think I was reading further down that the PayPal guys were saying that most of the fraudulent activity occurs outside of the eBay system and the PayPal system. Because don't forget, PayPal does own eBay.
Mm.
So, you know, they've got a vested interest there. In fact, it's almost a bit nepotistic in a lot of respects. But
it means that they're tightly integrated systems, though. So where you have the auction and the transaction taking place on one side, you've got the financial exchange happening as well. And the two things aren't completely separate entities. They're linked tightly together and they can be tracked.
And I think that's got to be good because if one other thing that PayPal's going to do, they've got a protection program, which you may or may not be familiar with. It protects people if you buy goods and, or not so much services, but goods on PayPal, and they don't arrive or for whatever reason, it's not what you expected. There is a protection program where you can get your money back. Now, this has been a contentious issue in the course of time as well. There have been a lot of people unhappy with this process. But nonetheless, they do offer it. And the level of protection they offer is $3,000. But under this new system here in Australia, that's going to move from $3,000 of protection up to $20,000 worth of protection.
Wow.
Which means that if you're buying things online, which are fairly, you know, high in price, a piece of electronic equipment or something
people
like that.
People spending that much, those sorts of amounts of money on eBay transactions.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Wow.
Absolutely. You've got to, don't forget that eBay is replacing a lot of those Trading Post magazines that used to be fairly predominant early 80s.
Yeah.
And on those things, there are things like cars and boats, fairly large consumable items. And these are actually exempt from. There are a few items that are exempt from this new system.
Well, they have special policies for those items anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what PayPal are up to. They're actually going to say, righto, close everything else down apart from paying through us and we'll give you a bit more protection, but for the large organisations, the large consumers, you can still do it through the direct deposit, which I think is fantastic because I use PayPal all the time. I prefer to use PayPal because instead of giving my credit card details, my 5353 blah, 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 over the internet for people to collect and do what they do with, in this case, I'm just giving my email address, which I've actually given.
And you only give your credit card number to PayPal themselves.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's so safe. Even if you don't, as a merchant, even if you don't have credit card facilities and you're soliciting for donations or you want to sell something online, become a merchant. You have to prove your identity to PayPal, which is relatively easy and straightforward. And then once you've done that, then all you need to do is say, please pay Ron. Oh, Ron's email address is ron@... And how much do you want to give Ron? Give him, $25 or whatever it is like that.
$35.
Done easily. You're worth that much.
Mm.
And I think that is just, in the whole scheme of things, a very secure way of doing things. Now, from a merchant's point of view, it's only, the commission basis is only a 1.1 to near enough 3%, which is less than credit cards. So if you're a large bank and, I take credit card facilities at the office, but I'm going to scrap them and delete them and say, Commonwealth Bank, thank you very much.
It's been fun. It's been swell.
Yeah, you've got to compete with eBay now, who aren't charging annual fees, indeed, who aren't doing this, and it's been great. See you later. And you can accept credit cards. So I just think that the PayPal way to go is really good. And you don't need to be a PayPal account holder. I can't get that emphasized enough.
Mm,
you don't need to be a PayPal account holder to actually get all this.
To actually use it.
To send money using PayPal. You can send to an account holder without having to sign up.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I've been talking too long. We're going to go over tonight. I can feel it in my bones.
Can you?
Telstra expects to win the broadband plan because of this thing. I don't know whether you mentioned this in the news tonight, Dr. Ron, but Telstra has moved to preempt the Rudd government's tender for a $9 million broadband network, saying it expects to get the nod from the project and will get an unprecedented $4.7 billion worth of taxpayer subsidies. And they ask for a bounty. Not a bounty. What do you call it? A deposit. A bond, I think, is the word.
A bond, okay.
You know, if you're half interested, you've got to put this money up before you can bid for it and all that sort of stuff. But I think this is, once again, can I put my suggestion here? What we should have done is that the Australian government, instead of selling off all of our assets, put an organisation together to roll out the cable, the satellite, the technology for fibre to the node, for everything else like that, sell the bandwidth back to Telstra through the government body and do it that way. So it's government-owned. There's no competitiveness behind it. It's an infrastructure.
But we've already sold all the copper cables.
Absolutely. And I think, well, we're not going to use them. We're going to use fiber, aren't we? We're going to use bits of blue cable.
Well, we've already sold all the trenches that they're in and all the
dig more.
All the infrastructure, all that, all the exchanges that they're going to link back to.
Mm.
All of that's all been sold off. And the copper's still going to be the last mile, as they say, from the pillar to your home.
Absolutely.
And that's been sold too.
It's no longer owned by the Australian public, is it?
No, it's owned by a private company. Mm. Very sad.
F-Secure. They're a security people, like not unlike Kaspersky's and all that sort of stuff. Have you dealt with F-Secure before? I've seen, Graham, you might have seen some of your clients' machines.
Yeah, I see it around from time to time. Yeah, I haven't had huge amounts of dealings with it.
Yeah, I can't speak from experience here, but Lyd caught up with one of the guys from F-Secure in the United States, and she'll introduce him in just a sec, all about what's going on in the online world and antiviruses and Trojans and things like that. It's a bit scary. It also sort of tells us what we sort of already know at the moment, but what we're to expect. Now, the RSA conference, which is was in San Francisco, has all the major organisations.
What's the RSA conference?
Responsible serving of alcohol.
No.
No?
No, but she did send a photo over with had the bomb squad out the front. There's just a bomb squad out the front. It's a security organisation sort of thing.
Like, really? Okay.
But no, it's all about security.
It's security,
and being,
isn't it?
Being safe online and anti-hacking and all that sort of stuff. And it's the large players are there, the big boys, talking all about, you know, that's where Eugene won last year when, his antivirus product was, stood up to basically everything they could throw at it.
But, which I'm using now on my Windows machines.
Are you? Very good. Anyway, here's Lyd to talk a little bit about F-Secure and what it opens up at the RSA conference.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for joining us on Tech Talk.
My pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about F-Secure.
We're a European IT security company. Mm-hmm. We've been doing security for 20 years now, primarily antivirus, but obviously we're doing anti-spam, firewalls, anti-phishing, basically the whole thing.
So what does your product offer?
It's like a sort of peace of mind against all of these types of threats. It's a one-stop solution, especially for home users. You install it onto your PC, that's it, you don't have to worry about it. It protects you against all of these types of threats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been designed to be easy to use, automatically updated, not just for the signatures themselves, but also sort of technology comes rolling down to your PC without you ever noticing it. The way we try to deliver security is security as a service. I mean, that's sort of a hype word in the whole industry, but we've been doing it now for, I think, 7-8 years. We know that people don't necessarily want to buy the 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008 version,
mm-hmm.
just to get, you know, the latest and greatest. Once, you know, our customers have the product installed, they should just get whatever latest security technologies we're able to come up with. The way we're trying to bring this to the market, or we are bringing it to the market, is through ISPs. In Australia, we have Optus, for example. When you sign up with them, you can sign up for a security package, which is delivered by F-Secure. It's sort of install and forget.
Tell me, you guys are learning new things every day, so I wanted you to talk about what is new in terms of security.
Well, the threat as such hasn't really changed that much in the last few years. The big change we started seeing was from 2004, 2005, when sort of we started seeing the shift from the bad guys being teenagers to the bad guys being criminals, writing malware for money, which is the type of people we're fighting today. It's all about botnets. Stealing information, stealing data, stealing financial information.
Yes. What's a botnet?
It's a network of infected PCs.
And how does that happen?
Well, it can happen in a number of ways. The traditional way would have been an email attachment. So you get an email attachment in an email, and typically a social engineering type trick, you know, here's a cool video, click on the file, and you would click on the file, and your PC got infected. Back in the old days, what your PC would typically do, would be that it would show you, you know, a funny message, or it would start deleting things off of your PC. Then we moved on to email worms. So when you did the same thing, you double-clicked on an email attachment, it would start sending out tons of emails to your address book and to other email addresses it found on your PC. Nowadays, it's much more hidden. What they want to do is what they want to have control over your PC. So when you double-click on the email attachment, you don't really see anything. It doesn't necessarily start sending out, you know, tons of emails or doing anything else. Typically what it does is that it connects to what we call a command and control server. And it just hooks up to that server, and then it's waiting for commands from whoever's behind the malware. And those commands could be, send out emails or send out spam emails, install adware, start attacking a website, or do any of the other massive things that we're seeing. It's happening to pretty much any type of PC, but primarily home users' PC, because we've seen that they have less protection than the corporate users. And of course, they could be stealing your information from your PC, but that's not typically what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't want your vacation photos.
No, they don't. No.
Exactly. They don't want your documents. They want to be able to use your PC's resources, your PC's broadband connection, to send out emails or to do attacks against websites. We've seen attacks against online gambling sites, for example, where they extort them for money. They start attacking this website, and obviously this website, if it is an online gambling site, their whole revenue is coming from their website.
Yeah.
People go into the website, putting in bets on different things. And if their website is offline, no customers can go online, there's no revenue for the company. So they're a fairly attractive target to attack. The top attacks, what we call distributed denial of service attacks.
So what's happening is the home user saying, well, but how does that concern me? Because they're using your machine.
Exactly. They're using your machine. They're using your broadband connection to do these types of attacks.
So if that's followed back, can someone follow it back to my machine?
Of course. I mean, that's where the trail leads to.
And that's where it ends? Or?
That's where it ends, typically, because you don't really see the traffic between your PC and the command and control. That's typically hidden or not stored anywhere. So the malicious traffic looks like it's coming from your PC. Now, obviously, you're not aware of this happening,
no.
So you won't get prosecuted, but you might get a call from your ISP saying, you know, your PC is part of an attack. You're going to have to clean up your act, or we're going to turn off your internet connection until you do.
How would someone know if their machine, because this is a zombie.
Or botnet, or, you know, lots of different names for it. The easiest way to do this is just by running an up-to-date antivirus software.
Is it a common thing? Is it?
Absolutely. I mean, there are millions of PCs out there that are infected all the time. So it is a very common thing, and typically you won't really notice. I mean, these things are designed to not be found.
Sneaky.
Yeah, they want to stay in your computer for as long as they can. What you might see is that your broadband connection is slower. That, you know, you go to a website and it downloads a bit slower than normal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not very easy to find out.
No.
They could be because of, you know, a whole lot of different reasons. So the easiest thing is to just run an antivirus software. And if you're not running an antivirus software online today with a PC, shame on you. We find 1,500 new pieces of malware every single day.
What is the state of online security at the moment?
I'd say it's pretty bad. I said there's so many threats out there. We're seeing thousands, if not tens of thousands of websites being modified or hacked or put up to do malicious things every single day. We have hundreds of thousands of people getting infected every single day. We have bad guys making money by doing or creating malware and doing online crimes. And most of the time, they're getting away with it, too. We've been tracking these cases. I'll give you an example. We've been tracking three guys who didn't know anything about computers as such. So they got in touch with a Russian hacker group who created a Trojan for them. A Trojan that would be stealing your banking information and your credit card details. This information was uploaded to a server and just stored there.
Mm-hmm.
So these three guys checked through the logs that were stored there with and picked out the stolen credit cards, the stolen usernames and passwords for online banks. And they started withdrawing money from their bank accounts. They started gambling online with the stolen credit cards, gambling with, you know, a fair amount of money. And they didn't care if they lost because it wasn't their money to begin with.
Mm.
It was someone else's.
Mm.
But, of course, they took the winnings. They made $3.5 million in about a year or so. And they were funding terrorism with this money. They actually bought equipment for insurgents in Iraq. Food ratios, night vision goggles, airline tickets, survival knives, all sorts of stuff. So that's the reason why the authorities found out about them was obviously that they were funding terrorism. But of course, there are, you know, a number of these people that are making as much money or more that aren't being caught. And that's the big problem. We need better cooperation between us in the security industry and the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, we need better cooperation between authorities in different countries.
Internet Interpol.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been promoting an internet police for years. I think that's the only way we can solve this problem. Because, you know, what do you do if you have a malicious programmer in Russia selling his application to someone in Ukraine and the crime is committed in Australia?
Also, now I look at it and we've got Web 2, you know, the whole concept of Web 2.
Yeah.
We've got mobile phones. We've got all this new technology coming out. I mean, are we keeping up with protecting all that sort of stuff as well?
Web 2.0 is a bit worrying because you're sort of handing away the responsibility of securing your information to someone else.
Yeah.
Let's say you publish information on Facebook or MySpace or Orkut or any of these other social network sites. Basically, what you're doing is that you're uploading your information to them and you're making them responsible for securing that information. There's mm-hmm. nothing that you, as the user, can do.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a problem in their site or in their application, it's up to them to fix it. You know, we've seen worms spreading to hundreds of thousands of users in a matter of hours. On Orkut was the latest example.
Yeah.
And there was nothing that you, as the user, could do, except avoiding clicking on the link on the email, because that's how it spread. But the actual fix had to come from Google.
How long did it take for them to fix it?
It took them half a day or a day, which is really fast.
It is fast, but it's still a long time.
It's still, exactly, you know. I don't remember. I think it was 400,000 users that got infected eventually. It's sort of just starting. I mean, we're seeing more and more of these sites going online. We're seeing more and more people getting onto these social networking sites. We're seeing the social networking sites getting connected to each other through different application interfaces. You know,
yeah.
MySpace can talk to this site, can talk to that site.
Yeah.
And they can share information between them. So how do you secure all of this? Well, it's sort of, that's the magic bullet right now. We don't really have any great answers to that. It's really up to these sites that they have to create solutions that are secure so that they can secure information. The problem right now is that there's sort of this race to build the coolest Web 2.0 site or social networking site, so features are more important than security, which is why we've seen a fair amount of information stealing vulnerabilities or even what we call wormable vulnerabilities, which can then infect hundreds of thousands of users in a very quick time span.
What about mobile technology?
I think there we're in a much better situation than we are on the internet. The good thing about that is everyone's on board, everyone's aware that we have to deal with security concerns. Yes, we do have 401 mobile viruses as of now. Yes, there have
401.
Been 401 compared to 680,000 for PCs.
Oh, wow.
So the numbers are obviously very different. The mobile operators are concerned. I mean, they are aware that these threats exist.
Mm-hmm.
The operating system manufacturers, Symbian, Microsoft, BlackBerry, Apple, all of these are aware that these threats exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we've started dealing with them now, before they're really out of hand. So we're trying not to repeat the problem we have on PCs, basically. We are having an open dialogue between us, the security industry, the operating system manufacturers, the operators. And I think we're in a much better place to secure the mobile space than we are with the PCs.
Apple security, is that changing now?
It is definitely changing. I mean, yes, we have seen Trojans for Macs. We haven't seen real viruses for Mac OS X. The Trojans we've seen have been fairly simple, but yes, they exist. So you can't say that your Mac is entirely secure, but the likelihood of you getting hit or getting infected on a Mac versus getting infected on a PC is obviously totally different. However, I don't really approve of Apple's advertising saying that, you know, buy a Mac and you'll never get a virus again.
Yeah.
We've actually even talked to users who've had their Macs infected. They called up Apple support, and the support people said, you know, no, you're running an app, you're running a Mac, you can't get a virus. But, you know, I have a virus on my Mac right now, how do I get rid of it? No, it's impossible. And that's sort of taking it too far.
Yeah.
Yes, from a virus point of view, absolutely, you'd be more secure on a Mac than on a PC. But Apple really have to take these things seriously. We have definitely seen an increase in the number of vulnerabilities on the Apple operating systems, including the iPhone. Safari browser, for sure. I mean, they just fixed, 86 vulnerabilities a few weeks back. They fixed another 11 now in QuickTime. And actually QuickTime, which is cross-platform, it's not just on Mac, it's also on Windows.
Yeah.
We've seen a huge increase of using that as the vector of getting into your PC. There's been lots of vulnerabilities found in QuickTime that enables Windows malware to get onto your PC. Why that is because of the huge sales of the iPods. They've sold 100 million iPods or something like that.
Yeah.
Every single iPod user is installing iTunes. With iTunes comes QuickTime. QuickTime integrates into your web browser without you really knowing it. Any website could actually load QuickTime from a web page. And if there's a vulnerability in QuickTime, the same web page could use that vulnerability to get into your PC and install malware. And this is what we've seen. So we've seen sort of a change from, you know, a few years back it was email attachments. And we started fixing that problem by filtering out malicious email attachments. So the bad guys moved from email attachments to what we call drive-by downloads. And that is you getting infected by just visiting a site. Presto, bam, you get infected. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to click on a link. You don't have to download a file. You just visit a website. And this is what we call a drive-by download. Now, the first drive-by download sites we saw were using Microsoft vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities in Windows, vulnerabilities in Internet Explorer. Now, Microsoft has gotten really good at fixing these vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So we started seeing the bad guys moving away from Microsoft applications to other browsers, Firefox, Opera, Safari, and nowadays these browsers are updating automatically too. So what we're seeing right now is that the bad guys are using QuickTime plugins, RealPlayer plugins, WinZip plugins, Winamp plugins. Plugins that are, or applications that are hooking into your browser without you knowing it to show more dynamic content on the web, whether that is movie files or audio or flash movies or whatever. The bottom line is that they're integrating into your browser, which means that potentially they can be exploited over the web, and that's what we're seeing. And the application to exploit right now seems to be QuickTime because it's installed on so many PCs. But I do think that we will see malware on iPhone because it's such a popular device. We have found a number of vulnerabilities that could get malware onto your device, and now that the software development kit is available in June this year, people are going to upgrade to version 2.0, which is going to support third-party applications, and these third-party applications have access to, you know, the network, your address book, your mail, pretty much everything on the phone, so that could potentially be a big problem.
Thank you so much for joining us on Tech Talk.
My pleasure.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Just before we close out and go to the website, gadget and odd spot of the week this evening, Amazon gives $50 to each HD DVD customer. How about this? This is a nice sort of gesture, I think, on a large retailer's
new customer or
old customers.
Anyone that's bought an HD DVD product.
Yeah, along that line. Online retail... Let me speak.
Okay.
After bewitching you.
Yeah.
Online retail giant Amazon has given a $50 credit to all customers who bought an HD DVD player before the 23rd of February, the date that Toshiba officially surrendered the format war.
Sorry.
Oh, I see. So this is like a reward for people who chose the right format.
Right. Oh, this is a contentious issue.
Interesting way of looking at
it.
That's the only way to look at it.
Whether it's right or wrong format, it's a format that's now obsolete. That Amazon in particular are actually taking a bit of
the glass half full viewpoints from Graham Kellyanne.
Sorry,
I had some feedback about Google Browser Sync.
Oh yeah, I use that. Why? What happened?
Well, I had a bit of an experiment with it last week after our discussion on the previous show,
and
I got it working really well on the XP machines. And I scooted over to the Google Browser Sync website on my Ubuntu machine, on which I'm running Firefox. It detected the operating system and detected the browser and installed it, and it worked for a very short time, and I was extremely excited. I had it running for minutes and minutes, and then it bombed out and said, you need to reconnect, and I tried to reconnect, and all I get now is... I'm looking at a screen grab here in front of me. An unexpected error has occurred. Please try again. Security Manager Vetoed Action, NS Error XPC Security Manager, and some meaningless numbers and
codes.
I
know what that means.
You do?
It means go and get a coffee, you turn everything off and try again.
I think so, and that's what I've done. I've tried to reinstall it, but keep it in the same error. But I'll persevere, so it's almost platform independent.
Right.
Is it? I wonder if it works on a Mac.
I don't know.
My first port of call with error messages like that is Google.
I googled them and found a lot of people asking the question, what does this error mean? And no answers. I did, however, find that it has been logged as a Google Browser Sync issue, and their development team's looking at it at the moment.
It's in the Bugzilla, is it?
Yeah, it might have been a Bugzilla page that I found eventually. So they are aware of the error and they're trying to fix it.
So that means they're sitting there drinking coffee going, I wonder how we're going to fix this.
Yeah, good. That's it. If you've used Google Browser Sync on a Mac, let us know.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Used it working across platforms, let us know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the last bit of the show.
You're listening. Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual
power.
And I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
overstating your fingerprints.
Now, this
may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
don't open the thing, but good that you're not expecting, even if they do a good
job. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Fraunhofer non-exploding lithium-ion battery. How exciting is this, especially to all those Dell laptop owners?
A non-exploding battery you think is more exciting than an exploding battery?
I think it will. Again, glass half full, glass half empty. Yeah, an exploding battery would be quite exciting, but also quite terrifying.
Yes.
Lithium-ion batteries have kept gadget lovers on their toes for some years with their occasionally combustive ways. Now, researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute for Scientific Research in Germany think they've solved this problem by successfully swapping the liquid electrolyte, that is the flammable stuff, used in conventional lithium-ion batteries with a non-combustible alternative.
A good idea.
ISC team leader Dr. Kai Christian Namola, in a statement earlier this week, said, "We have succeeded in replacing the inflammable organic electrolytes with a non-flammable polymer that retains its shape."
So this means no more Sony batteries going to go kapoof in your computer?
Allegedly.
Well, that's good.
But don't get too excited. We have at least another 3 to 5 years before these non-explosive batteries make their way into laptops and cell phones.
Mm.
Thought it was good, though.
Yeah, very good.
Good gadget. The Fraunhofer non-exploding lithium-ion battery.
Here it is, everybody! The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
The website is flightaware.com. Have you ever been to this site?
No. What's FlightAware?
I had it appointed out to me during the week. It's a great interactive website which tracks not only commercial but private aircraft in and out of the US.
Handy if you're in the US.
It is, or if you're flying to the US, or you're coming from the US, a great mapping interface.
Or if you're meeting somebody who's coming from the US.
Exactly, exactly. A great mapping interface shows real-time location and progress and arrival times of aircraft. You can search by flight number or airport code. Now, I put in the airport code for Melbourne here.
ML.
It recognised that was Melbourne, and it drew a map. But it just said that it didn't have a lot of real-time data. But if you go to an airport in the US, for example.
LAX.
Yes, you've got all the real-time information, the flight time and the locations of the planes. It's amazing.
What you need to see is when people are walking from Terminal 4 down to Terminal 1 for their domestic flight. Oh, that's a walk.
Exactly. So if you're listening in the US or you're a frequent flyer there to there or from there, flightaware.com is the Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Paul Rothmund is a computer scientist and an artist, although not necessarily in that order. Using a few DNA molecules, an atomic force microscope, and a computer, he can fit the likenesses of 50 billion smiley faces into a space no bigger than a drop of water.
Great.
Rothmund refers to his brew of art, biology and technology as DNA origami because it is created by using hundreds of short DNA strands to fold much longer genetic ribbons into nanoscale shapes and patterns.
What's the practical application of this, Dr. Rob?
I don't know that there is one.
Just to be clear,
but I'm speechless.
The resulting microscopic creations are currently on display through May 12 at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, as part of the Design and the Elastic Mind exhibit.
Yeah. That's the one that's on the backs onto Central Park, not the Guggenheim across the road from it, off 6th Avenue.
You've been over there?
I have.
The show includes images of snowflakes and maps, not to mention 1970s-inspired smiley faces in DNA strands. There you go. That's our odd spot.
Fantastic. Yes, because someone can, really. It's the only reason,
isn't it? Because they can. Because they can.
Okay, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. That was Dr. Ron with all the good gossip and odd things that are happening in the tech world this week. Until next week on the radio station you're currently listening to, we'll return with more of the same. So until then, stay safe, everybody, and thanks for listening to us and your ear pods and stuff like that on the train, because that's where we get a lot of our listeners. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McCollum, producer Dr. Ron Hanlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.